Welcome to the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech.
Hi, and welcome to today's episode of the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech. The Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech gives a look into manufacturing, a focus on stories and trends to lead to better solutions. Our guests share tips, outcomes that will help improve your productivity. My name is Dave McKenna. I am Smart Packaging Practice Leader at Grantech. And today I'm joined by Robin Maurice of Grantech. Robin is the district leader for Grantech's Montreal office. In this new role for him, he's going to be overseeing work done by Grantech in New England, Quebec, Eastern Ontario, Atlantic Canada, and the Northeastern United States. Robin lives in Montreal, Quebec, and his primary language is French. So we get to enjoy a nice French accent coming on our show today. Don't be surprised with some interesting translated expressions. Better your English than my French, though, Robin. So again, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
I'm good, and like I said, I'm kind of famous for those expressions. It's kind of a running gag. So thank you, Avangu, and looking forward to exchange around today's topic. So
awesome. So Robin and I have known each other for 10 years plus, something like that. When probably the biggest one, we were both in a dairy warehouse doing a large massive project, which also had a very intense commissioning period of cutting over a whole plant and a distribution center on a weekend to a new system, and it was very cold and lots of had to commission your programming with your winter hat on and your jacket and challenging situation, but really, really enjoyed working with you on that, Robin, and since. And it's a pleasure to kind of to pick your brain today on our show. But so just a question, I ask guests this, and I don't know that I've actually really ever asked you this. We get so busy at work, we don't always take time to know more about our colleagues. How did you get into manufacturing? How did you get into automation? How did your career start?
Yes, and I know time flies, but it's like we known each other for, I would say, 13 years.
13,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It all started with a previous boyfriend of my mother that was a manufacturing engineer. I did some pre-university classes in mechanical engineering, then fall in love with automation, basically. So did register to an automation engineering university degree at ETS in Montreal. Did some internship after at a bakery that was looking into automating their processes. You know, I remember playing with an Ethernet PLC card with network segregation back in 2006. So this was kind of the early introduction of PLC Ethernet card. It was awesome. I was kind of working with the IT department on some of that. It was pretty good. Worked there for 2 years after university on a contract. But after that, the company was, looking into selling. So of course, not investing. So not a lot of project for me then. So they didn't renew my contract. And this is really where my career started at Grantech after. So that's really it.
Interesting. And that's because we're both from Canada, and I don't remember, honestly, when I was looking at universities. It's cool to hear that there was an automation program, because I don't remember when I was looking that I didn't even see it. I always saw kind of the core, I'll call them the core disciplines of computer, electrical, chemical, that kind of piece. And it wasn't really an option or choice at some of the schools, or maybe, and I obviously wasn't looking into it that deeply anyways, but interesting, cool to see from school. True believer here, Robin Maurice, in automation career and professional, started from the beginning on it and continue.
But access access from information was not as easy as it is today, right? So back then, like, you didn't, yeah, like, it's not something you could go on Google and start looking for that. So it was kind of mouth to mouth, and like someone says something and then you hear something else. But yeah, it was really a combination, as like you said, focusing around the mechanical engineering, the electrical engineering, some of the automation, all combined, and the software engineering all combined into one. So if you kind of did a more mechanical background as you were coming in, then your class were more focused on the other area that you're trying to be up to speed. And if you were like more like a software engineer, then you had less software engineering class to start. And then they were bringing all the mechanical and the electrical part as well. so that after the first year, everybody is kind of up at the same place, and then we're moving forward. So,
I mean, that's really, I think, a lot of value. And I don't, for any of our younger, I'm sure there's lots of college people listening to this podcast right now, maybe not, but that's a lot of value that you can have these multidisciplinary approach. Cause that's, at least speaking from my experience, that's where I struggle earlier on and still leverage. At this point, it's a little different story for where I'm at in my career, but I struggled and had to leverage others heavily on the mechanical side, because just not having that background and sort of more of a pure computer electrical focus. But if you can get that broader piece, I think that really does certainly help throughout your career. Do you have any kind of, before we kind of get into the interview and questions, do you have anything to promote, any dates coming up, any events, anything? Anything you want to kind of share?
Yeah. So the one thing I want to promote is a little bit different than events. So for me, it's really more around leadership, mentorship, and paying forward. I think like every day when you head to work, I think it's important to strive to have like a positive impact and also to contribute the growth of people around you. Over the past few years, this has been really my primary focus for self development. And I constantly ensure that the people I'm working with or collaborating with on that are also paying it forward to others, which is really a good way to help build a strong culture in an organization and also around you as well. So I wanted to bring that because this is really important to me. And I want to make sure that, you know, paying forward piece is really the critical part to this.
Do you think, just on that, do you think that that's suffered with remote work and reason? So just one context for this, I've started thinking about some of the pieces I do think about it before also, or regularly, I'll say, boosting and mentoring and developing people again at this sort of midpoint career. But recently I was thinking, hey, I need to go back in the office more. That's something that benefited me. I remember lots of times working closely around other people, sitting in the same room, sitting in a project room, working on a project together, being able to walk down the hall and talk to a senior person and learn. I really benefited from that. And so I thought, well, I'm not giving back in the same way that I received, so I need to go in. I went in and then there's nobody there. And the chair wasn't as comfortable and there was no garbage can and a few other little trivial things, but the bigger one was, hey, there's no one there. So my attempt to give back, at least physically, by kind of repeating what was done for me, didn't work. Do you see challenges on that with remote work? What are your opinion of remote work? Are you particularly around leadership development and development of colleagues, coworkers, and peers?
I think really where I saw challenges, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, was around bringing new employee fresh from school. I think that's been really the, because it's like where you learn a lot, right? Going into the office, talking to people, seeing what they're working on, then there's some kind of engagement and people are going to talk to them. But when you bring new people in, even though, yes, at Grand Tech, we had like some buddy system in place, there was a lot of places that we put in to try to help. But it was ensure everybody's kind of making sure stay feel connected to the company was really one of the challenges I see. From the remote, I think like, you know, kind of hybrid setup is really where I'm a big fan myself. I think like, I think like everybody learned that it's good from time to time to maybe work from home and be more productive on those specific days, less meeting, focus time, then try to balance everything out. Maybe you have some stuff from a more personal that you need to stay at home to be faster after work going there or things like that. I think that's really where I see, you know, helping a lot. But I see also like some kind of a domino effect here where a lot of people keep saying there's not a lot of people in the office. So if I go in the office, then, you know, I'll be by myself. So I think this is where there was a lot of things that, you know, I saw different offices that we have trying to put things in place around having one or two specific days where everybody try to go in the office. So at least like making sure people are going on that day, start from there. Also, I think you need to lead by example, because you're saying around leadership, mentorship, I think you need to lead by example by actually going yourself if you want, or if you expect others to actually going as well. So one of the key thing that we're trying to do, at least in my district, is the concept of people that are leading a job or doing mentorship, kind of trying, if it's possible, to have the person they're working with coming basically in the office. So basically not the company asking for the person to come, but more for saying, hey, to collaborate on this project, what do you think about us kind of focusing on a specific day on the job, right? And we're actually going to go in the office to be more productive.
I mean, that's an interesting, it's a couple of things you said that are funny. I remember back in the day, right, there'd be work from home Fridays. Well, now it's like work in the office Thursday. So like it's kind of flipped to say the special day is the special day we plan for is going in the office. I think that's a good point, and maybe we'll close at that. But I like the I'm working with you on this project, and hey, let's go into the office so we can work together more effectively and faster on this, as opposed to I'm your boss or your boss's boss, and thou shalt go in and hey, we're going to pull your access card logs to make sure you're in and stuff like that. I think that's an interesting kind of bottom up, and let's do this for a reason, and promote a connection between people as opposed to thou shalt message kind of coming down from on high. So no, good, interesting, good idea, I think, to be honest. So we do kind of like to have a little fun here as well. And before we get into the changes and future of the world, and before the AI takes over the world and the robocalypse is upon us. So first we'll see how funny the AIs can be. When we live in a future robot dominated world, are they gonna have good jokes or not? We're here to find out. So here's an AI riddle from generatorfund.com/riddle-generator. See if you can solve it. I am taken from a mine and shut up in a wooden case from which I am never released, and yet I am used by almost everybody. Thoughts?
Interesting. Could you repeat that, please? Just to make sure I got everything.
I am taken from a mine, M-I-N-E,
yeah.
And shut up in a wooden case from which I am never released, and yet I am used by almost everybody. 3, 2, no pressure.
I don't know, honestly.
You don't know? Yes. Pencil lead, says the artificial intelligence. No. I'm going to say it is kind of released in that you smear the graphite on or lead on a paper. So I think you got that wrong. Not yet ready for prime time comedy AI. So first question we'd like to ask everybody. What is Industry 4.0 to you? It's broad. It's everything from data analytics and lakes to 3D printing and who knows what else. What is your opinion of it?
I'll go. So I'll try not to give like a purely web search definition of it. I don't think that's really the goal here. So, but you know, high level, Industry 4.0 does represent the fourth industrial revolution for sure. It's like a significant paradigm shift in the way industry operates and utilize technology, right? Basically reshaping the industrial landscape and with the potential to improve efficiency, sustainability, and as well quality of life for the people as well. You know, you already enumerated a couple of range of technology, but AI, Internet of Things, big data, cloud computing, robotics, to name a few. Really, I think in my mind, Industry 4.0 also does encourage a more sustainable approach to industry, right? By optimizing resource utilization and also reducing waste. And also kind of AI does raise some concern, right? It's important to bring those. There's job displacement, which has been talked for a long time, right? Even automation was scaring a lot of people back then. I think that's still a valid point. Data privacy and security, where we keep hearing more and more lately with data breach and things like that, for sure. And like I already alluded in the previous point, I think it's really important to making sure we're embracing this revolution responsibly, right? By balancing benefits of those technological advancement, but also with an ethical and societal implication as well, which is really how I see that.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of, and this is all about me, interesting ethical questions around AI. Now, I do think it's a bit rich to worry about job displacement, particularly from AI, when how many operators have lost their jobs, or people who did palletizing by hand, or people who case packed by hand, right? So in the past, lots of blue collar people lost their jobs, and all of us computer-y types will go, well, yeah, we need to be more efficient, and hey, we're all better as a society, and safety concerns. So yeah, we got to replace operators with machines. Well, now they're coming for programmers, and who knows who else. Well, I can't really say I was against one or for one, but or accepting of one, let's say, but not accepting of the other. But yeah, I think good points, and definitely the AI piece. Security is another big one, and we've seen companies get hacked and manufacturing lines kind of shut down in some of this. So certainly some of the same stuff as before, robotics and automation and increasing productivity, but certainly some new things that if you told someone in the 20 years ago, 1980 or more than 20 years ago, that's 30-40 years ago, PLCs are really hitting stride and being rolled out everywhere, that some person potentially in their basement or another state, a state with 100 people doing PLC programming could lock your PLCs and demand that you submit a ransom, they'd probably say, what are you kidding me?
Yes.
But yeah, certainly some new stuff, some of the same as the past revolution and some new stuff. No, good. I think good comments, and glad to hear your definition. So kind of tying to that, and maybe this springboards to some of the ethical pieces you talked about, maybe not. What are some of the big challenges you think manufacturers are going to face over the next 5 years?
I think I'd like to divide this in two phases. So I'd say today and maybe in 5 years. So for today, one of the most significant challenge I foresee is the ongoing impact of COVID-19, right? Especially around supply chains, labor shortage, and also fluctuation in demand. Right, really making it difficult for manufacturer to maintain operations at their normal capacity. But there's definitely beyond the pandemic, right? I think there's several other percentage challenge that manufacturers are facing. There's the supply chain disruption, right? Again, the pandemic highlight vulnerability in global supply chain, all of which can lead to delays and increased costs. There's technology adoption and integration, right? So transition can be complex and expensive as well, especially for small manufacturer, something really to think of. Workforce development and skills gap, right? As we alluded before, finding and retaining skilled worker remains a significant challenge. And also as the technology evolve, there's a growing need for workers with specialized skills. So going back to the job displacement we talked a little bit earlier, I kind of disagree on that, because it's really forcing people and the society to adapt and be more technology savvy, so that as kind of things progress, to be able to support those as well. There's the regulatory compliance and environmental sustainability as well. You know, there's a complex landscape of regulation out there, so I think that's really something they're facing too. There's cybersecurity and data privacy. You know, greater risk of cyber attack and data breach, like you alluded before. And
do you think COVID? Sorry, yeah. Just a question there. Do you think so? I completely see and appreciate and agree on labor shortage.
Yep.
And we see this across our industry, but also across manufacturers. Understand that's a problem with that. Do you think that's still? We're getting into conjecture and speculation here, but that's what makes podcasts more fun. You think that's COVID, or you think are we just hitting demographics and all the baby boomers are out, or everyone, hey, got higher paying jobs at somewhere else, or everyone wants to work? Like how much of that is COVID, you think, versus
it's
just other things have hit after it, or what do you think?
It's hard to say. Like, honestly, this has been talked multiple times over the past couple of years, months, just inside my family with others. But it's, for me, it's a combination of a lot of different things in my mind. I feel that, one of the key aspects that I foresee, especially now, you know, with kind of a recession kind of lingering out there right now, I see some of that having a huge impact on what we're talking here, because as kind of recession starts, there's going to be less demand in my mind. So if we reduce the demand, will definitely help around, you know, I would say people being able to, you know, let's say work on their backlog, reducing demands, which will help kind of supply chains to catch up. And in the end, we'll probably kind of, like I said, again, rebalance all of this, because at the end, if there's less demand, probably less needs of employee, so that you can rebalance all of out. Because there was definitely a lot of sector that were affected more than others, right? If you think about the restaurant and the food industry, that's definitely a place that, you know, they had a lot of challenges going back into this, right? So I think like it's a combination of everything. I think there was a movement in employees around with different roles and stuff. And I think it needs to go back to some kind of equilibrium over time. So
you think it will? I mean, we didn't know how good we had it at all. No clue, right? You could walk into a restaurant and eat inside, as opposed to there's a sign on the door that says takeout only because we can't hire people. Right?
Yeah.
You would never think of that. Never mind you're waiting 6 months plus for your PLC because just can't keep up semiconductor wise. Everyone's cranking out work from home laptops versus building.
But as
less pricey PLCs.
But right? As a consumer, that's why I'm going back. As a consumer, we will need to adjust our expectations, to be honest. So I see, like, just going in a restaurant, right? So I was going into a restaurant near where I live a couple of years ago. I go there. There was a lot of people. Service was, you know, top notch, but they were paying a lot of dollars to have all this staff. Now you go in and you wait a little bit more, the service kind of reduced a little bit, but in the end I'm okay with this because I know they struggle for labor. So that's why there's that piece as well. And I think the other piece that is really important for us as a consumer to start thinking of is really our expectations around customization of products, right? So really, I'm always like amazed on where I go to the grocery store and I see like 60 different type of cereal boxes, right? You know, people will have to realize that over time, all of this costs money to everybody, right? Because which means like to have all those product, manufacturer does face challenges in making sure they can have those different boxes in there, which relates to a lot of changeover, a lot of inefficiency, a lot more shift to produce. So that's why if you go back, even to all of this, if we start kind of reducing our expectations for customization, maybe this will help as well, making sure that manufacturer can reduce the amount of changeover, be more efficient, having to produce less, so maybe needed less operator, and then be able to bring some more workforce to do, like I said, equilibrium over time with all the other areas.
Yeah. I mean, fewer SKUs too, you could potentially bring it in house because you're doing more production at once as opposed to a whole variety of different kind of SKUs, and you got to scatter it across some co-packers and who knows. Now, maybe those real manufacturing operations people are cringing at our automation people's perspective of the business, but interesting point. And I think no one has previously kind of brought up recession is your chance to catch up versus not been brought up. And I think that's an interesting one, and we'll see where that goes. And hopefully recession isn't people pull back on investment and then we're just still playing catch up anyway.
Which is interesting in saying that, because if you think about it, you know, one of the challenges that I think people had in the past is the concept of, because you know, such high demand, right? You're constantly focused on your day-to-day operation. You're dealing with fires. There's not a lot of time to invest into new technology, right? It's going to be hard for you to find time to install new technology if you're really dealing with fire all the time. So I think as an industry, we need to make sure to start rebalancing proactivity versus reactivity here, and being more proactive into what you said around, just figure out a way. If you have labor shortage, maybe you need to invest in automating certain part of your process, right? But then by doing so, you'll be able to make sure that you can maybe at the end save some, I would say solve some challenges that you have. But you need to find the time to be proactive and less reactive.
Yeah, and we've certainly seen, and I've seen it too, some of the differences in different customers and their ability to embrace new technology and move it forward versus no, hey, we're just trying to keep the wheels on kind of piece. And I think that's where Industry 4.0 can be good, because it's such a buzzword. use the buzzword for all it's worth, everyone. If you can, you could use that to get you that week of downtime to install something. It's a good thing. Embrace it. So do you think anything on the, just we're talking about technology, we're talking about expectations. Do you see any, pieces of kind of the consumer side where, and you mentioned Lorek, you mentioned any pieces where on the consumer side, you're seeing consumer technologies, consumer advanced applications moving into manufacturing? Do you see some of the higher end stuff in the consumer side changing expectations on the manufacturing technology side?
You mean like on the technology that would be adopted by the manufacturing?
Yeah, because in manufacturing, we have expectations of, hey, the screens are like this, and I walk up to it over here, and and I got nice big fat giant push buttons, and that's kind of what you're used to, what you expect. You see potentially with newer employees coming in, people, I hate this word, but all these digital native youth, man, I sound old, coming in. Is that, as they come into manufacturing, does that change expectations of the kind of technology in manufacturing? Does that pull some of the consumer developments in and new tech from there?
Yeah, so a couple for me I see is really around augmented reality, AR, right? Especially, and also virtual reality as well, VR, which is the abbreviation. And I think this is really where this can really be used for tasks like training, right? Remote assistance, and also virtual production prototyping, right? This is where, going back to those, you know, say digital generation, I think that's really a good way to bring that in, but it's also to help, because with the attrition, the high, I'd say rollover, and like people change, you know, changing job and stuff, it is important to be able to assist people. And I think from us, from an, like I said, an integrator firm, it is important to be able to help remotely some of our customers as well. So I think that's really where I see this as being beneficial for the industry. You know, there's, in my mind, you know, just going back with the Internet of Things, IoT, I know it's already prevalent in our manufacturing world, but, you know, adoption is expected to continue growing and growing. That's really important. Having all access to all this data to be able to take some really good business decision is really critical. And I think, you know, one of the other pieces that is important is really around 3D printing, you know, and other stuff that, you know, you could use to try to, you do some prototyping, you know, customization production, and also on-demand manufacturing, which we said earlier already, like the consumer are asking for customization and stuff. And sometimes you may want to use that to be able to do some quick testing on things before investing. And that's where, like, I think this is really those that I foresee.
Okay. I mean, I like the remote assistance is such a funny one, because I mean, I kick myself at every customer where we don't have it yet, or where it's not present. And there's, and most of them, everybody seems to, for the most part, be set up for this, because they're if you're a decent sized firm, you've got your IT people, this is kind of set up. And that's not new, but it's still something that isn't default with companies. And that seems so odd to me, that at some clients we have to ask for that, or it doesn't come up, or for whatever reason it doesn't happen on the first couple projects or something like that. I think that should be, unless there's something I'm missing, that needs to be the default. The default is you are doing equipment, or you're selling, if there's any software kind of component to it at all, which probably is everything, that should be the default, that OEMs can connect to stuff. And I know you got to balance kind of security at the same time against this, but man, the efficiencies and the downtime you can save, and the better customer experience you can have with that remote assistance, it again shocks me that we're still having to kind of ask for this. Again, it should be the default. It should be expected of a vendor that we're going to set you up for remote assistance, and we're ready in when something goes wrong. Things do go wrong with anything in manufacturing. So that, I agree on that. And new ideas on training. And one we've done recently with a kind of forward leaning customer of ours is, we've done I like the idea of AR and VR, but we're also just building a machine. And you know, I'm not talking a palletizer or something that massive kind of piece, but we're building a small station that we can roll around to different plants and create it and ship it, almost like a trade show style size setup and rig and use for training. And very happy that customers is, again, very forward thinking and seeking to have hands-on kind of training for people. And the VR version of it would be interesting. But yeah, maybe that's a future one I should probably take a note of, but companies that do that, I think is great. IoT, just your perspective of what you're seeing, how much of IoT is, and there's so many automations, islands of automation, there's so many isolated pieces of equipment still out there. How much of the IoT stuff are you seeing is new things, i.e. slap and stick sensors, a vibration sensor on something or things like that? How much of it is that versus how much of it is things they already have that already are part of the business and just connecting those? So printers, connecting codators, connecting checkwares, connecting flow meters, I don't know, whatever. How much of it is connecting existing devices and pulling from them versus let's go buy a bunch of new stuff and start measuring things we didn't ever do before?
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's really hard. Again, it's a mix of everything. I feel like there's a lot of older device that don't have those capabilities, right? So that's why you're thinking about some connectivity. No different than working with some of those old VFD, which had like some obscure kind of protocol, talking to them. So I think like as we move forward, like there's more and more Ethernet connectivity or any type of easier connectivity. We also have software SCADA that have, you know, a bunch of different protocol to communication as well. So easier way to get access directly to the device. But I honestly think that, again, there's a lot of device out there that it would make sense for people to gather data, but also making sure you have the proper network set up for it is really a key. And sometimes there's a lot of investment to be put around this, as we know, and this is not new, right? For it's sure. been there for quite some time, but just bringing back that's really where a lot of people come to see. And I think accessing the data is one thing, but what are you doing with it is really what is important, right? So going back to some of the, you know, say machine learning or, you know, some of those other pieces that you'll kind of use to analyze a lot of data to be able to take good business decision, right? Is really where do you go from there, right? So, yeah. And I think like one of the places I was really amazed that I visit over the past couple of years was really like a distribution center where there was a lot of, you know, as a technician on shift, and basically the entire facility was monitored remotely, right? And they only had two technicians on shift for a big warehouse. And basically they had communication headset, you know, a bunch of stuff. And when things were down, they were basically being told, you need to go grab, let's say, this VFD out of this location, you need to put it there. Here's the guidance to install, and basically remote support. And this is internal remote support, right? So they had a team remotely looking at all their warehouse, and they're basically leveraging the same team to support all their warehouse. So that's a good way to be, again, efficient in the way you're doing things so that you don't have specific procedure for all your different distribution center, as an example, and you're leveraging the same team. So again, that's a good way to ensure that you're helping around labor shortage as well. But I was pretty amazed, sure. Right? Pretty amazed, honestly. That was really good.
Yeah, I mean, headset, it's a simple technology and effective. It gives you freeing your hands while still allowing you to communicate. I wonder how, I mean, we've both been in so many noisy environments, and I wonder, how does that fit with, and I'm sure someone's figured this out, how does that fit with hearing protection? Like a warehouse is not a...
It could be different. And I think some would use like a work order tile printing stuff, like has all the direction. Yeah, yeah. I know like this is where we talk about some wearable, like I know there was some like glasses or whatever other things you can use to actually, but I think like for me, it's more like for how you're leveraging the same support team to remotely assess, using machine learning to probably preemptively start looking at changing some of those devices and basically sending the, you know, those stuff. So, and it was pretty amazed, like, to be honest. And that's where I think like from a training perspective, this is where it's really good, because if you bring like a, let's say a technician coming in for a support, like a good way to do training is basically using digital twin or like some kind of setup where you can have them basically simulate a lot of stuff that you would have to do during their day-to-day job and basically be able to coach them while doing this virtually in that case, right? So really good around safety as well. Yep. For them, right? Especially if you're playing your electrical panel as an example, that's a good way to monitor some of that and make sure they have the proper training around it too.
Yeah, that's an, I can certainly see value in a remote team and a remote, particularly, I mean, it's a small thing, but a headset, you truly can get both your hands free. If you do have a camera on it, you can really see what that person is seeing. You can walk them through that if you've got a centralized team and you've got the scale to kind of support that. Or even with your vendors, right? If you're a remote vendor, you can call up your case packer vendor and they're seeing what you're seeing at the same time. You do still want to be, there's that balance of being cognizant of not putting an employee in a position where they're doing more than they should or electrically going to be doing something unsafe or stuff like that. So I think there's you got to balance a little bit of that with, is the remote person seeing enough and that they're not talking that person into something they shouldn't. But yeah, certainly interesting support approach and some not out of this world stuff. I know there was one other company, a software, I'm forgetting the name right now, who we spoke with, who used headsets, and headsets would accept instructions and accept commands from people. So yeah, there's certainly some simple things that improve on there. Do you see this as something, you talked about warehousing, we've talked a lot about, I think, operators and kind of maintenance level. What about plant manager side? What do you see plant managers doing in all this? Are they changed? Is there, obviously their plants are affected by Industry 4.0 and some changes. How do you see them affected?
For me, it's really about modernizing operation. That's definitely one of them. Also enhance efficiency, like we discussed earlier, for sure. And I think position their facility for the long-term success as well. I think that's really the key focus, really thinking about the long-term in that case, right? So key factor in there, cost reduction, of course, quality improvement, you know, data-driven insight, which is really important, going back to the IoT, getting data information, mm-hmm. be able to assess that. There's the employee empowerment as well, right? Empower your employee to take data-driven decision, right? And focusing on real important things instead of just crunching numbers or bringing numbers together. Like, I think that's where, like, if you're using them to do the things that make sense for helping best decision, that's really good. Sustainability impact as well is really important. Having a competitive advantage as well is really something, right? Leveraging advanced technology for sure. And I think going back to the point around customization and flexibility, that's definitely something could help, because I know, like, again, that's one of the challenges manufacturers, because people expect customization, there's, you know, they have to find ways to be able to do it while still making sure costs are being reduced, right? So I think that's where that's the other piece, honestly. And predictive maintenance is also a key aspect in my mind around all of this. Try to, again, focus on proactivity versus reactivity in that case.
And I think the data point and empowerment is an interesting one. It's so easy to get caught up in collecting all this and looking at it, but who are you really presenting it to and making sure it is presented regularly to people who can change things and run operations, and as opposed to some historian that's quietly capturing everything back in the cloud and no one knows. Does, if a historian hears of a downtime, does it make a sound, right? No, it does, as the old saying goes. But I gotta, just to kind of, we're kind of getting close to our time. I'm gonna ask a question from a previous guest, and then you get a chance to kind of say one for next guest. If you had a magic wand and could change anything, what would you change about Industry 4.0?
Oh, interesting question. I'll repeat myself a little bit because I think I brought some point before, sure. But I see this from two angles, right? I would like to think from a manufacturer standpoint and from a customer standpoint. I think if from a manufacturer standpoint, really rebalancing proactivity versus reactivity by being more proactive is really something, right? We said it's hard to find time to install new technology when you're focused on day-to-day and basically constantly putting out fires. I'm a big fan of the rock, pebble, and sand analogy, right? Going with the concept of trying to put the sand, the pebble, and the rock in the jar in that order. That thing fits in the jar, but if you're starting with the big rocks, the pebble, and then you put the sand in, the sand will go in all the crack and magically everything is going to fit in the jar. I think we need to spend, you know, that's really the concept of spending time, you know, less time on small stuff and more time to focus on the truly important stuff to reduce the amount of sand that you have to process. So in that case, if we're able to realize that Industry 4.0 could be a way to reduce the amount of day-to-day fires that we have to put in, solve, that's really something that it will help a lot. And I think from a consumer standpoint, we need to stop complaining and be part of the solution, I think, right? Going back to, we should lower our customization, personalization expectation as a customer. You know, in the end, it costs money to everybody, right? So look at, you know, like I said earlier, the amount of cereal boxes on shelves and stuff. That's a good example of like, we need to stop doing this because in the end, if you have less changeover because you have less different customization that you have to do, there's less operation costs, you're more efficient, you have less staff required, which equal less workforce gaps issues as well. So those would be really my angles.
I really like the proactive piece and maybe you can, because that's the whole point of all this. Yep. The whole point of this is you're getting ahead, right? And you're getting ahead with a whole bunch of technology that's being thrown down, or you're having data so you can decide what to do to get ahead. But you've got to still do that. You need to be proactive. You're going to need to put aside that money for some of these upgrades. You're going to need to put aside that time and your people's time to make those changes. So I think another guest has talked about change management and change. So you need to kind of commit to that. But that's the whole point of all this, is to be proactive. I like that. So thank you. And then from a customer side, I'm gonna disagree slightly. I love what, you know, the cereal aisle is where I go to see what's new and be inspired. And my kids love to just pick whatever random one each time. And I think the market will decide how much customization we need or not. And it is interesting just comparing for those of you traveling ever, where both of us are in Canada, but we're in the United States a fair amount. If you think there's a lot here, if you go to the US and go down the aisle, you'll see like 4x the number of different flavors of everything. So I think it's really what a market will provide. And again, what hopefully some of this technology, where does that go? That's an interesting question. Does all this technology improvement go to lower costs, higher profits, or are we just, we're going to use this to have more and more choice and more variety? I guess we'll see where that goes. So for our next guest, kind of my last question, what's an Industry 4.0 question that you want to answer? What should we ask? What should I ask my next guest?
So I have three young kids and I'm thinking about their future. So for me is, how can Industry 4.0 technologies be leveraged to not only enhance operation, efficiency and productivity in manufacturing, but also promote sustainability and minimize environmental impact, right? What are the most effective strategy and best practice for achieving that dual objective is really what I'm more curious about.
Perfect. We do need to live in the world as well. Yes. As consume. We need to not just live in it now, but live in it future times. Yes. For future people. So yes, we need to keep things for them. And no, good question. Perfect. So Robin, thanks for your time. Good conversation. Enjoyed it. And thank you. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for bringing me in. Really like talking about Industry 4.0 topic today. And I hope everybody enjoyed it.
Perfect. So thank you for listening to the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech. Please do hit the subscribe button on whatever device you're on, wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions or feedback or thoughts or anything, please email them to info@grantech.com. And I hope you can join us again next time on the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech.